Hello, and welcome to Your Holistic Health on WRRS, Radio Reading Services in Cincinnati. I'm Dr. Kathy Rosenbaum, Holistic Clinical Pharmacist of RX Integrative Solutions, and your host for today's program. We're so glad that you could join us. Your Holistic Health brings you the latest in practical health information and health tips that help you stay safe, give you support, and bring you a message of hope. Today's guest is Karina Luttmer from Salt Lake City, Utah, who is certified as a diplomate in Oriental medicine and will be talking with us about acupuncture. But first, in the news, beginning April 15th this year, Amazon started requiring dietary supplement manufacturers that sell on their platform to guarantee that their products can withstand temperatures up to 155 degrees Fahrenheit and still meet label claims for stability and potency. These temperatures sometimes are seen in storage warehouses or during transport and are more likely to be seen during summer months. Of particular concern are supplement gummies and soft gels. So it's probably best to purchase those products in retail settings as opposed to online to bypass any transport-related temperature excursions. Amazon currently has no standard operating procedures for the temperature control of their warehouses or their trucks that are used to store and transport supplements. Someday, the FDA might force Amazon to implement procedures for ensuring the integrity of meltable health products, but that's probably not likely to happen anytime soon. So, buyer beware. Our first health tip for the day includes three ways to improve your memory health. Number one, meditation. Meditation generally involves focusing one's attention in a calm, controlled way. According to the National Center for Complementary and Integrative Health, research suggests that meditation may benefit the brain by slowing brain aging and increasing the brain's ability to process information. Number two, practicing Tai Chi. This is one of my favorites. Tai Chi is a form of physical exercise that involves gentle body movements, rhythmic breathing, and meditation. A 2019 study compared brain function and connectivity among Tai Chi practitioners and those who did not practice Tai Chi. The researchers found that the Tai Chi practitioners had enhanced connections between different regions of their brains. They propose that this may improve cognition and decrease the rate of memory loss. And then finally, sleeping. Sleeping has been proven to boost memory recall and reduce mental fatigue. That's the good news. Getting enough sleep each night is an important step towards maintaining a healthy brain and body. We need 100 minutes of REM sleep each night. That's the deep dream sleep. So check your watches, your Fitbits, and dream away. Our second health tip for the day involves a food product, cucumbers. This fruit contains 95% water, vitamin K, and anti-inflammatory compounds. Cucumbers have a powerful impact on health. According to a study published in the Journal of Plant Foods for Human Nutrition, type 2 diabetic patients could actually lower their blood sugar levels by eating more cucumbers, in addition to taking their medicines, of course. This nutritious vegetable has a key to lowering blood sugar levels because of its fiber content. Fiber is the key. Next, cucumbers are high in potassium. They may reduce sodium-induced water retention and thus lower blood pressure, according to the American Heart Association. Cucumbers are also antioxidants. Sounds like a healthy superfood. Our health tip for the day, eat more cucumbers. How to do that? Well, you could nibble them raw. You could make a chip dip with yogurt and cukes, make a hydrating juice, or add them to a delicious Greek salad. Your health tip number three has to do with loneliness. Loneliness might be the other pandemic. It remains largely unaddressed in many clinical settings. Loneliness can be a significant disease risk factor. A recent study utilized a loneliness scale and assessment tool, asking participants to respond often, sometimes, rarely, or never to 7 different statements. And here they are. I am unhappy doing so many things alone. I have nobody to talk to. I cannot tolerate being so alone. I feel that no one really understands me. I am no longer close to anyone. There is no one I can turn to. And I feel isolated from others. It just breaks my heart to read those statements. The study that I've quoted wanted to better understand how people cope with loneliness and how others can intervene to remove that loneliness. The health tip for today. Wouldn't it be great if our doctors checked in on what I'll call our loneliness quotient and said to their patients, "So you say that you don't have any friends and you're lonely? Well, I want you to know that I like you and I care," showing empathy and compassion. It takes a village, but only a moment to express love and concern. Let's all reach out to someone who needs to know we care today. And now it's time to introduce our guest. Karen Luttmer completed her doctorate of acupuncture and Chinese medicine in 2018. She is a member of the Academy of Integrative Health and Medicine. She is certified in acupuncture, Chinese herbology, and clean needle technique. Karina works at the Integrated Medicine. She works as an integrated medicine practitioner, rather, at the Primary Children's Hospital in Salt Lake City, Utah. Welcome, Karina, to Your Holistic Health.
Thank you for having me. It's great to be here.
Well, I know that I am interested, as well as many of our listeners will want to know, how you got interested in acupuncture and how that fits with your practice at the Children's Hospital.
I have a little bit of a crazy journey, but I've always, since my early 20s, I always went to an acupuncturist because I had chronic sinus infections. And as life has gone on, I actually decided to go and train and study this medicine a little bit later on in life, because I always found that it was the one thing that made me feel better. So I went off and I studied, and I ended up coming back to Utah to start my practice. And when I opened my practice, basically a lot of individuals were having fertility issues. And so I ended up helping a lot of people with IVF, IUI, and next thing I know, they had babies. And then once they started bringing in their children to my private practice, I actually became specialized in pediatric acupuncture and got additional training. So once Primary Children's was aware of that, they had had a department and they were losing their current pediatric acupuncturist. So I was kind of recruited to go and work in the hospital there. And so that's kind of how I got to where I am today.
That's so exciting that acupuncture has a role and a place in kids.
Yes. And it's amazing how well children respond to Eastern medicine. They're great, great patients.
Well, what is acupuncture? Let's just get back to basics.
So acupuncture basically is a means to activate these meridian channels that run through your body that carry blood, energy, fluids, your spirit that kind of run through every individual. And when we go through life, we have a tendency to either do something in excess or it becomes deficient or obstructed. And when that happens, we get ill. And so what acupuncture does is it is a stimulation of points on your body that help your body heal itself. So 3,000 years ago, this practice began, and they've identified that certain points in the body can heal certain, what you would call Western diagnosis, but there are channels that run through that if you open them up, then we can cure a lot more, help the body heal a lot faster by using just simple pressure on a point or stimulation with a needle.
All right, so let's talk a little bit about meridians and how they are associated with acupuncture along these tracks or channels.
Okay, so there's 12 main meridians that we work with. And what we know is that if you're dealing with something like stress, indecisiveness, if you're dealing with a lot of, let's say, groin pain, pelvic pain, things like that, we would want to address the energetic meridian that would travel through those areas. And that would be either the liver channel or the gallbladder channel. Now, they're named after organ systems, but it doesn't mean the organ is necessarily involved. It was just a way that back in 1929, they could clearly identify the channels for other individuals and Westerners to study the medicine. So these channels can, like I say, get blocked or become deficient. And that's kind of like when we're doing our diagnosis, we look for the channel that's being most, activated or the one that needs to be activated. And that's the channel we will treat after we've made a diagnosis.
So when you talk about diagnosis, I'm assuming that means pulse and tongue diagnosis or no?
Yes, yes. Well, it also depends on your practitioner's kind of area of study. I am a traditional Chinese medicine practitioner. I trained in China, and I basically follow the old traditional Chinese medicine texts. There are, however, a number of different types of acupuncture. You could do five element acupuncture. You could do community style acupuncture. So almost all of us use tongue and pulse, but it's not necessary for every single time being treated. Some practitioners will not take tongue and pulse every single time they see a patient, but most do.
Right.
So, and then from there, we identify, again, what channels and come up with a diagnosis like qi stagnation in the liver channel or something like that.
So that kind of brings up another question about, I guess we'll call it Western medicine diagnostics versus Eastern medicine diagnostics of pulse and tongue. Does one replace the other? Why or why not?
I don't think, I like to think that all medicine, anything that's good for the body works together. In Eastern medicine, if a patient comes in and they have a Western diagnosis, we actually use that as our symptoms to do our diagnosis. So if someone were to come in with, let's say, iron deficiency, a skin rash, their hair coming out, they may have different Western diagnoses for that, but we might consider that that's blood deficiency. And we are going to be treating it with, you know, supplementing blood, basically, through diet and through needling the correct points on the body. So they work really well hand in hand, but they are different in the way we diagnose.
All right, so when you're using needles in an acupuncture modality, do you use electrodes more often than not? And if so, is there an impact on this energy called qi with electrodes?
So we don't necessarily use electrodes. We do call it e-stim, though. That's where we will place the electrical current onto the metal needle, right? And that will pulsate into the point that we want activated. It can be very powerful. We use it a lot for tendinitis or actually infertility. It's used a lot for infertility just to get things activated. It does affect how fast qi, in my mind, qi will be activated because you are putting in extra energy into the body. So a lot of times that will get more kind of a response. It could be almost a yang response. And it doesn't really hurt. It just is like a pulsating, like you would receive if you had, like electrodes put on your body from, I don't know, there's like patches you can put on and those type of things. So we do use it, but not as often, not in everyday use.
So I've actually experienced acupuncture with and without electrodes. And so for our listeners to know, I'm still alive. I didn't get shocked to death. I'm living proof that it's not that painful, to validate Karina's comments on that. But I am curious, because I think there are so many different types of acupuncture, as you've mentioned, not only just, you know, how you're diagnosing whether or not you're using the five elements of traditional Chinese medicine, whether or not you're an individual client versus a room full of clients in a community setting, but rather where are you placing the needles? So tell us a little bit more about ear, hand, body needle placement.
Okay, so both ear and hand are known as microsystems. And what that is you could treat the whole entire body on the ear, and it's known as auricular acupuncture. You could treat the whole body off the hand or even the foot. So there are microsystems all over your body, basically, that relate to different areas of your body. So let's say you on the ear, you're upset. Oh, well, here's a prime example. So I'm involved in a study right now with neonatal opioid withdrawal syndrome of infants. And we use auricular stimulation on these children with Accu beads. And what we're doing is we're actually trying to calm the mind, calm the shen, and calm their energy down by just placing simple beads on those ear points. So you could treat the whole body in any type of illness someone has. Whether or not it would be as effective as quickly as the patient would like is something that could be disputed. Some people believe the microsystems are as powerful as if you were to needle directly into the area of pain. Because I'm very traditionally trained, I like to go where injury is occurring, pain is occurring, and needle around that area if I can. But if you can't get there, you can always use a microsystem.
Well, I'm really excited to hear about your research in neonatal opioid withdrawal syndrome. It's a huge problem. You know, the opioid epidemic in adults in the United States mm-hmm. is a huge problem. Do you feel that there's going to be an increased role for more acupuncture with regard to these opioid situations in the future?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Acupuncture is a great way to help with any type of withdrawal, be it opioids, nicotine. It can even help with some, what I would say, addictive behaviors, so with food. So when we are treating these, we actually do mostly auricular work. We help the body detox by points on the body. But with the emotional and kind of chemical addiction, we do a lot of the auricular. We find that if we do the auricular with detox points on the body, it takes the withdrawal symptoms down to really only being severe for about 3 days. We see another flare 14 days after and then 21 days after, where people will have really strong cravings. But if you stay with a practitioner, and a lot of times they can also offer you, if they are trained in Oriental medicine and have board certification in herbology, they could provide you with a formula that also helps you get over your addiction. There's some great ones that I've used in the past with nicotine withdrawal. So, I do see it playing a great role.
All right. So on the other side of that equation is the treatment of pain that truly exists, such as in those individuals with osteoarthritis, or perhaps even sports injuries for our athletes. You know, tell us a little bit more about what you would do for that kind of a client, and maybe how many treatments do you think that it would take to help improve mobility or, you know, maybe reduce inflammation, stuff like that.
Right. So when it comes to osteoarthritis or actually any type of immune response going on in the body, a lot of times a practitioner, we will give you an acupuncture treatment, but we have to address the underlying reasons of why this is happening. You know, why is your body having these reactions? Why is there a buildup of what we call dampness and either heat or cold taking place? You know, why is there not enough blood flow going to certain joints? Like, what is the reasoning why you would have that? From there, we would probably do some nutritional advice. We may do some herbology advice and then obviously do acupuncture. Usually with something like arthritis or immune issues, we can see a positive response after first and second treatments. Now, because those are chronic conditions, it is our job as practitioners to get your body as in balance as it possibly can and then see how you do on your own. That doesn't mean if you get a flare, you don't want to come back to us, because you do, because hopefully we can help that flare go down. Now, if it's something like a sports injury where you, you know, twisted your ankle, then I would suggest going in immediately, and you should get a fairly good response after one treatment, because what we can do is we can either bleed that area or we can help bring blood to that area for it to heal. And so that would be a different situation where you would want to see your practitioner fairly close together to try to get the body to heal itself quickly. With the chronic conditions, it takes kind of like you develop a relationship with the disease and figure out the best ways to get, you know, your body to respond to the imbalance. So I guess I didn't answer the question of how many treatments. I always recommend that a patient come see me at least 3 in a row, and then we decide, number one, are the treatments beneficial? And if they are beneficial, then we either add additional treatments to it or stay on the path if we think this is the path to go on. If the treatments are not helpful, then either we completely change modalities or maybe we, you know, have to end the relationship, which rarely happens. Usually we can get a person to have relief. But again, every body's different and every healing process can be a little bit different. But you should see results within 3 to 5 treatments.
All right, so let's set up a session for our listeners. What does it look like? How long does it take? What do they have to do to prepare? What's it like having needles all over your body, sitting there lonely? We talked about loneliness earlier. Just paint a picture so people wouldn't be afraid or anxious having never tried it.
Right. I always describe it, because I do actually acupuncture a lot of children. In my mind, it feels like a flick. So it feels like a gentle finger flick on your arm, your hand. What will happen is you will come in, you'll meet with your practitioner. They will most likely ask you what we call as 100 questions. Ask about things like, how are your bowel movements? Do you urinate? You know, what do you eat? Things like that. How are you sleeping? So they're going to ask you about a bunch of things. That gives us kind of a diagnosis and the best way to treat you. You don't have to worry about that. You just answer the questions. Then depending on if they're a private practice and they have separate rooms, or like you say, they're community style, they'll have you sit or lay rest and in a restful position. And then they're going to just tap these needles into those points. Now, if it is painful and it's hurting you, then you tell them. But most of the time, you barely feel the needle go in. Then you're allowed to rest for anywhere from 15 to 45 minutes. And then they'll just take the needles out. And depending on if they want to do cupping or if they want to do some body work, things like that, every practitioner treats a little bit differently. Then you'll be able to go and go home, and hopefully you'll get some good results. I do recommend that you eat before you go to a treatment, and do not have any alcohol or any drugs in your system, because that seems to, I know it sounds weird, almost gets heightened when you're getting acupuncture, because your energy is moving so much. So it actually can become really unpleasant for the patient if they are on any alcohol or drugs.
So when you say drugs, let's clarify that you're meaning recreational drugs, correct. Ethical medications that doctors put them on.
Right. Take your prescribed medicines. Yes.
Absolutely. Yeah. All right. So kind of along the same lines, let's talk a bit about minor side effects that can be expected sometimes, or maybe any contraindications to acupuncture.
Certainly, I mean, there's always a risk with a small needle going in that you could have some bruising. So if you have any bleeding disorders, or if you're on a lot of blood thinners, you need to let your practitioner know. The needles are so very thin that we don't see a lot of issues, but you're going to want to let them know. Working on the oncology floor, you're going to want them to know if you have low platelets, low red and white blood cells, you need to let your practitioner know. Here in the States, we do have a little bit of guidelines on what we can do. In China and other countries, they will needle you even if you have extremely low blood counts. Here in the States, we're a little bit more cautious, just because we do not want any bleeding. We do not want to run a risk of infection. However, if you're a normal person and you're not having any serious chronic illness, most of the time, the biggest side effect is maybe a little bruise. You can feel what we call acu-stoned. If that's not inappropriate, where basically you're a little zoned out after. You may, if you haven't eaten, you may be really hungry and feel like you have low blood sugar. So those are really the big things we see, as far as, you know, when to be careful. But just let your practitioner know how you're feeling, and then they will gauge, off of your energy, the correct dosage of acupuncture to do.
So I love the fact that there's a good amount of dialogue with the client and you, the practitioner, prior to, during, certainly after, if necessary, a session, which it sounds like is going to last somewhere between maybe 45 minutes to an hour max, and that it's a relaxing environment. It's not a painful, these needlings aren't quote unquote that painful, and they're stainless steel, right?
Correct. Yes. And sterile.
There's a good tip to share. Very good. Sterile needles sound great.
So most practitioners will be trained in what's called clean needling technique. So the needles are one use. The area could possibly be cleaned. It's very controlled here and regulated on what we can do. So no worries about any type of infection or anything like that.
Right. And those needles are regulated by the FDA as devices, correct?
Correct. Yes.
All right. So one last thing. I want to mention that if you get cold, so say you're laying quietly, allowing the needles to do their work, while you're in an acupuncture session and you chill, do you have any warming blankets, or what do you put over, or can you put over the needles to help increase the comfort of your clients?
Oh, yeah. So I personally have a heating pad underneath, a heating blanket, and then I place a blanket over. It's a very unique thing. A lot of times acupuncture can cause you to feel a little cold, especially after. Not always, but some people do experience that. So definitely the rooms are usually, we keep them fairly warm, and almost every practitioner I know has blankets available, or they have a heating pad for you to rest on so that you can, and you know, your head will be on a pillow or in a really comfortable chair. Your legs will be propped correctly so that you don't get any back injury. So all those things are taken into account so that it's actually a really, like you say, enjoyable kind of nap.
Well, it sounds great. And I'd love to talk with you more, but Karina, we're unfortunately out of time. I'm going to go ahead and thank you so much for your information today and for being with us on Your Holistic Health.
Oh, pleasure to be here.
So we're going to finish up our visit today with a reading by Mark Twain, of all people. And it goes like this. Kindness is the language which the deaf can hear and the blind can see. It's time to wrap up our show. This is Dr. Kathy Rosenbaum, Holistic Clinical Pharmacist. Please visit rxintegrativesolutions.com for more information on my personalized wellness consultations. Blessings for mind, body, and spirit health, healing, and peace. See you soon.